So much going on. You know we love the stuff stuff off the floor, so very much of that to hit. Thursday Night Football is up in a little bit. Very important game for the Buccaneers. Can't afford to lose this one. Cost themselves a big loss last week against the Saints. So I want to start out with something that I don't think is so serious and get to something that is serious. And when I watched TV Talking Heads this morning, they flipped this. And I don't think they attacked the second story the way they did the first story. So for me, the first story of the day is Joe Burrow. And when you read the quotes of Joe Burrow talking about not having fun playing football, I mean, you can read into it. It can be a little bit jarring. But in the end, when you actually watch him in the press conference, you can kind of see what he's saying. He's also a weird guy. So you kind of have to try to figure out what he's trying to say because it's so disjointed and slow. And, you know, I watched that quarterback, that reality show, and I remember saying at the time, like, I can't figure out if Joe Burrow is a simpleton. He's stupid. He's amazingly brilliant, and he just draws you in by speaking all slowly because it's kind of the way he speaks around his family. And I think he was just having a moment of honesty, and people try to then turn it into he's going to retire. He's now Andrew Luck. Listen to what he had to say, and there's a bunch of different questions here kind of scrunched together because this literally took like 2 minutes to try to get what he was saying out of him.
If I want to keep doing this, I have to have fun doing it. You know, I've been through a lot, and if it's not fun, then what am I doing it for? The mindset I'm trying to bring to the table.
What was the changing point?
I'm not sure there was a singular moment or time. It's just a reflection on a lot of things that I've done and been through in my career, I think. And I've been through more than most, and it's certainly not easy on the brain or the body, so just trying to have fun doing it again.
There's something on your mind. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seemed frustrating.
There's just a lot of things going on right now. A lot of things going on right now.
Football related, personally?
All the above.
So he had a look on his face at the end. That was about 2 minutes and 15 seconds, and we scrunched into like 40 seconds. That's how much pausing there was. And I thought the question, hey, was there a moment when things turned? And, or when things changed? He's like, a moment when they changed. And he pauses. He's just, I think he's difficult to read. I think in this case, it's not real difficult. Listen, football's hard. The guy's been hurt. They're not winning. It can be frustrating. I don't think that means he's walking away. And I've seen the stats, you know, whatever he's had. You know, 83 games, 203 sacks, and Andrew Luck had 97 games and 193 sacks. Oh, it's the same thing. By the way, Luck, to my recollection, didn't give us any signs that he was going to walk away. I think Joe Burrow loves football. I also think Joe Burrow loves money, which I thought that was funny when he was like, he's like, why am I doing it? And I'm like, I'm sitting there looking at the screen, and I'm like, money! A lot of money. Like, those freaking designer jeans and fur coats don't buy themselves. They don't walk in on their own. So I think this is much ado about nothing. Now, the other story that I think is a massive story, and I was embarrassed for the Michigan men who were on the panel this morning. You guys are an embarrassment. I didn't see anyone today. And that goes for Taylor Lewan, who was on Greeny's show, Get Up. Schefter's on there. Schefter's so disjointed and so quirky and so weird and so not trustworthy at times. Like, I don't know what he's really saying. There was some move. Do we have Schefter here? Let me bump up Schefter one. Like, one of the messages Schefter wanted to get out is like, hey, Sherrone Moore needs time. We need to hear from him. Like, I get that. And I want to hear from him. I don't think it needs to be said in this moment as we're getting more and more information. And it just seemed like between him and then Rich Eisen, who's on this station, and Taylor Lewan, like, how about someone come out and go, how many times are coaches going to embarrass us? We are morally bankrupt. To be a Michigan man means you're above all. You're proud. You carry yourself a certain way. Michigan carries themselves like crap. It is winner take all. There's only one other program where I constantly say it is football above all else. And winner take all is not the right term. Football above all else. And it's Penn State. Football over kids. That literally is Penn State's mantra even today, there's still people apologizing for Joe Paterno and his actions. I got an email like 2 days ago. Hey, would you like Jay Paterno on to speak about the Penn State? I don't want anything to do with any Paterno. It's gross. And the stuff that's gone on at Michigan is ridiculous. And now we're seeing this goes back a couple of years, pretty much from the beginning. I'm guessing when he was an OC that, listen, womanizing is a thing. It happens. But if you're supposed to be this university that's above all others and you have certain standards, and Bo Schembechler is the one who came up with the whole Michigan man thing, and we can get into that. I didn't realize the roots actually aren't that old on that. But that's supposed to hold a certain connotation. And no one came out and went on a rant. Like, you're not going to get sued by Sharon Moore if you're careful in what you're saying. You can say, based on what we know, this is gross. Based on the fact that Michigan hired Sharon Moore to follow Jim Harbaugh, why Sharon Moore was even there is beyond me. By the way, Jesse Minter is still under a show cause penalty, so he shouldn't be freaking considered. He was part of that whole thing. This is completely ridiculous, and I got to listen to Schefter this morning. Hey, wait, let's pump the brakes. Sharon Moore, the family, his life is devastated. By what we know, and we'll give you more details, how about just come out and say, this is a move that should have been made months and months and months ago in the middle of the football season, if not before the football season. If there were legal reasons, then get a lawyer on. You could talk about the legal reasons, but I don't need to hear this.
What we haven't heard yet is Sharon Moore's side of this, and he gets his say into this particular situation as well. And I do know that he felt like people had it in for him for an awful long time there while he was at Michigan. He felt like there were people who were out to get him. So all these things can all be true. It's possible that, yes, Michigan does have evidence that he had an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. And it could be that Sharon Moore is right, that people had it in for him.
Yeah. It's possible that they had it in for him when it looks like there's multiple documented cases of reaching out to women. Clearly, there's something that's being investigated right here that's beyond just adultery or, a subordinate doinking. A boss doinking a subordinate. This is gross. And here's the thing. When I see rants coming out of Detroit from some asshat who went to Michigan State, I don't want to hear from them either, because you guys did the same thing to a different degree. This football over everything is disgusting. We have coaches who are completely out of control all over the country. You can find a different coach. Michigan State, Larry Nassar. That is horrendous. Ohio State had a similar guy. A doctor who was fondling many, many male athletes over the years, and probably some females as well. This is a Big Ten issue. And believe me, the SEC doesn't escape on this either. But the Big Ten can't judge. The other Big Ten schools can't judge Michigan. And listen, I have no axe to grind. I don't hate Michigan, but you can see what's happening here. When you see more and more people come out, and they're willing. Like, they don't even care that they're embarrassing the university. Multiple people within the school, sources say, these issues have been going on for a while. We knew about it 3 months ago, six months ago, a year ago. Like, then why the hell was this allowed to go on? You know why? Because if he had won 10 or 11 games and hadn't committed whatever this most recent alleged crime is, then he'd probably last. And it's the same system. You were so embarrassed, or were they, by Jim Harbaugh and all that cheating stuff and all the dirty pool, and then they have Sharon Moore in place, and they just let him do it. All behind a curtain, and it's like, oh, well, we kind of know what's going on. Well, then why was he there?
But the whole situation itself is just sad and tragic, because now we have a individual who had his professional life, his personal life, completely upended. We have a school with a bunch of players who don't have a coach to turn to right now. We have a school in search of a program, a new coach to lead forth that program. There are a whole host of things that have transpired here that have led this to be a completely surreal, wild situation that if you heard about it, you wouldn't believe it, because it almost seems made up.
I really hate coming on here and sounding like Pollyanna, because I am no choir boy at all. But this college coaching stuff where guys are allowed to go on and on and on, and then the enabling, we're talking about Sharon Moore, the enabling of that person gets them more intoxicated with power so they feel like they're untouchable. In the case of Sharon Moore, I hope he does a tell-all down the road. And they're like, hey, Sharon Moore, where'd you learn this behavior from? I learned it from you, Dad, Harbaugh. Like, and they chose to keep Harbaugh guys on the staff. And then I'm sure it was almost immediate that Michigan folks were like, holy crap, this guy's got some problems. You know what? This stuff is coming in so fast and furiously. Adam Hill will be coming up. I know he follows her really closely. Sherrone Moore's out in Michigan, and now we're finding out, you know, arrested. There may have been, you know, serious threats made here. I don't know. You know, we're going to find out. Freaking, he attended a Diddy party in the past. Curtis Terry is up with us. Let's talk a little basketball. Let's talk a little NBA as well. CT, what's up, buddy?
Not much, man. I'm definitely not. Would you call it a choir boy? Is that what the term you use?
I just said choir boy, yes.
Yeah, Dan, you're definitely not.
I mean, really, but I, like, we're both not. I'm not here to judge, because womanizing is one thing, but when it turns into something that is criminal, and then it sounds like dozens of people knew about it going on, and this is not unusual in college athletics. That's the disturbing part. And, you know, unfortunately now Sherrone Moore's family is going to be completely dragged through the mud, his kids. It's embarrassing. And frankly, for Michigan, they kind of deserve the shame.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It got out of hand. I mean, obviously it's happened really quick. And I think I read something that said that that there was people that knew about this, like, back in the summer and just kind of let it slide. And then I think, I mean, and with that said, I get it. People have powers that be, they can do what they want. But when you let something like that slide, I mean, you're obviously condoning the behavior, not setting the right example or sending the right message. And then when it gets to this level, I mean, you're doing everybody a disservice. Obviously, the victim, whoever that is involved in this, him, his family, like you said, I mean, it snowballs and got way out of control, especially you can stop it before. So I think that's the most disappointing part, because everybody goes through things. But it's unfortunate that people knew what things were taking place and let it get to this far, because nobody wins in this outcome.
The alleged criminal action may have been related to a recent breakup. So that would have happened regardless. But I'll tell you what, if Ohio State had lost to Michigan and Michigan's in the CFP, I wonder what happens. I mean, he did something alleged, right, in terms of criminal actions. I don't know, but you're right. If he didn't do that, it's like there are lots of people who've come out, and of course, are unnamed sources who have said, "Hey, this is like the worst kept secret on the campus of Michigan." Anyway, all right, let's get into a little basketball first on the collegiate level, and I want to check in with you on what you thought of the early part of the Mountain West Conference non-con slate. But the first thing is, UNLV basketball at least got the ship going in the right direction. They don't have a lot of games in December, so they got plenty of time to mend, plenty of time to blend, plenty of time to adjust to players coming back. And I thought the effort at Stanford in the final 5 minutes especially was really encouraging.
I mean, encouraging is definitely the best word. I mean, the outcome and the optimism has to be back for UNLV basketball fans, especially after players error and that great game against Maryland. They kind of just ran out of steam, and then we know what happened against Alabama, and then against Rutgers when you're up at half and just again continue to lose steam, but you don't have enough bodies, foul trouble, et cetera. But for them to have, 10 days off, to go through some practices, be able to heal and rest up, and for Coach Pastor and his staff to get that group motivated to come out and play, but then also to add in Emmanuel Stephen, and he hasn't played all year, and for him to start, come out with huge numbers. I mean, 18-10 and impacting game on both ends, big time dunks and putbacks, and bringing the energy and what he was doing all so far throughout the non-conference from the bench. But to add a guy like that, and for him to do it having not played much in the past, let alone when he was at Arizona, but also he's had a short basketball career as a whole, is definitely inspiring for this group and for them to be able to have a chance this weekend to get back after it. But I think the best part for them is, like you mentioned, they don't have very many games in December. They do have the one conference game coming up in about a week and a half. And so when they get to that one, that'll be good for them until they really turn it on full speed when they get to January 3rd, I believe. Not once conference play really ramps up.
Did you expect the offense from, as they call him, E-Man?
No, man. And I think we talked about this before the game. Like, we're not sure what to expect. When you've seen the opportunities we've had in the workouts and practice that he's been able to take part in, You see some, like, okay, this it could be a rim threat, a lob threat, putbacks, shot blocking, defending, paint presence. But you don't know how that's going to pan out. And then the other part is you don't know who's going to be healthy for the Rebels so far in the non-conference season. And I think I made the comment to you at one point. It looked like he was trying to get his sea legs under him, right? He looked a little gassed early on. You know, he called for a sub and went to the bench, but then came back and he was leading the group, saying he was calling for challenges from the sideline, and he was doing everything. But the offensive impact that he had, I mean, that jump hook, so nobody can get to that to try to defend that over that left shoulder, that was money from 5 feet out to about 10 feet. On the glass, he was getting put back dunks. He was finishing at the rim. And that's something that the Rebels have lacked so far this season. And coaches said it. And everybody will say it. When you have a presence like that that can score and impact and defend, that changes what you do, not just philosophy and scheme stand-wise, but as well as your whole team and what it allows everybody to do individually.
Curtis Terry's with us, former Rebel player and one of the analysts, or the analyst, former Rebel basketball on radio and TV coming up. You played outside, and I know you played with some good rim protectors. What does it mean for the perimeter players when you have that backstop like a guy like Emmanuel Steffen?
Oh, man, you got all the confidence in the world. So, like, for us, an example, when we played, I mean, we had Joel Anthony behind us. And obviously he was Mount Wisconsin's defensive player of the year. I think he set the league record in blocks at one point. Goes on to be that rim blocker, a rim protector for D. Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James when they went back-to-back championships. So in terms of having a guy back there that gives you that confidence that even if you do gamble, you get out of position, you can be a little bit more aggressive and pick up the ball in full court and just gamble and take chances to put that pressure on and try to turn their back. But if you get beat, you know you've got someone back there that's going to deter it. It's not going to be a straight line drive to the basket because not many people are going to take on 6'11", 7-footers at the rim. And I think the Rebels are going to be able to have that luxury now moving forward. But then you can mix and match. You got him and you got Jacob Bernardi. It's like when we had Joel Anthony, Gaston Asenge. You got big, long, athletic at the rim, and you got big bruiser down low. And so that allows you to be more aggressive defensively. And I think the Rebels need that. And that's kind of what's going to allow them to pick up the tempo, to dictate more, to get out in transition, because we've seen that's when they've been so good so far on this season.
I thought the defense was gigantic in the final 8 minutes. Stanford had a little run there where they took the lead 66-63, but before that there were three straight blocks or strips or steals, and it was really everyone. But we got to point out that freshman on Stanford, Okoro, is averaging like 20 points a game, and he got his points, but it was very inefficient, and DGL, Jerry Gibbs Lawhorn, did a great job. If he can actually be a consistent stopper at the guard position, especially the point guard, that is massive.
Yeah, I mean, what they did to him at one point, I mean, I know he obviously finished with 18 points. He was 4 of 15 or 16 from the field. But I think they had him at like 2 of 12 at one point until he got a couple buckets late in the game. And they flustered him. And I think some of that size and that protection in the back, obviously, Dre, when you don't have to have that as much of a scoring load on your shoulders all game, you can pick up and be more aggressive. We know Isaac Williamson is a ball dog, and he's going to pick you up full court, get in your jock strap. But defensively, we talked about this during the broadcast and post game with Coach. When they were able to have Tamani Hamilton, E-Man out there, as well as Tyron Jones, and they kind of went with you, whether they go man-to-man and they're really big across the front line, or they went to that 1-3-1 zone, they take up a lot of space, and it doesn't leave you a lot of opportunities on the backside of that zone. And those guys, the guards, were doing a great job exchanging on top and covering the wings and covering the point. And, it's just like, ooh. Man, what if? What could be if they continue to grow, continue to get healthy, and start adding guys back into it like Bernardi, like Laje Ndembele, if they get Miles Shea back? I mean, then you're talking about the flexibility of this team and the different ways they can attack you on both ends of the floor. And so that made my eyes light up because that last 6 minutes or so, they were banging their – they could not be scored on defensively, and it was that flexing between the man or that 1-3-1 zone.
Curtis Terry's up on ESPN Las Vegas. In terms of options on offense, when you have that bigger lineup with – Tyron Jones and Kamani Hamilton at the 3 and 4. The other great thing that you can do is you can ISO them on the wing, throw it to them with like back to the basket, even if it's like 16 feet out. They reverse pivot, and all of a sudden the defender, if it is a 4, is like, holy crap, what do I do now? Because now I'm on skates. And I thought Kamani Hamilton, I asked Pastner today, was that in the scout with Kamani Hamilton against their 4s? I thought Kamani Hamilton was like, you can't cover me, so I'm getting downhill, or I'm just going to back you down. I'm going to power up against you, but if I reverse pivot and I face the basket, you're dead meat.
Yeah, I think Kamani got to that point. I think, he started the game pretty slow because obviously man got going and he was putting up numbers getting putbacks. But it felt like late in the game, I mean, it looked like Coach, when Coach Smith went to that zone, it looked like Josh was trying to flash a big to that nail, to that middle of the free throw line, get him the ball there to ISO him. Or if they didn't get that, they would drive, kick to the corner, then relocate that four man to the wing to be able to attack and clear out, and that's when they would back down. And that was either Tyron or Kamani. And that was one way not only to get that ISO, but to not have it just dribble the ball up the floor and spend a lot of clock and have all eyes on you. You had some motion, some of it false, but it was a way to pull them out of that zone defense. And then kind of create the matchup and the mismatch that you wanted. And like you said, Kamani Hamilton is tough. When you're talking about 12 to 15 feet in, if he's got a live dribble, and he can triple threat back you down, he's got his full arsenal. And then Tyron Jones, he is just so long and so agile, and he can finish in so many different ways. And they're both really good passers. And so I think, when you add that mix, then you have – E-man in the paint at that low dunker spot. You have a rim threat, a lob threat that big man can't come across. And so, again, it creates more problems for the defense and creates more advantages for the Rebels offensively. And I'm excited to see how they continue to build that now that they've kind of got that look in their back pocket if they want to go three bigs.
Now, reality is we're talking about all the upside, and a lot of it's because they got healthy and they got a key player back in Emmanuel Steffen. UNLV is 4-5. They have to make up some games here. They're going to have to win some games in the Mountain West Conference. Maybe people don't expect them to win. Can they do that playing the kind of current basketball they're playing if they're not hitting threes? They're shooting 28.5% from three. They're averaging like 6.5 makes a game from three, but they've had many games where they've only made three or four. Can you win at a high level in this conference, which, by the way, is now turning into more of an up-tempo conference? Can you win without making the three ball?
You know, that's a good point because, again, it's kind of contrasting to what we've seen in the Mountain West Conference in the past, right? It's typically kind of been more bruising, more slow-paced, not as high-scoring. But I think the Rebels can because I think they're one of very few teams that have that front-court flexibility like the Rebels now think that we think they may have with the addition of Emmanuel Steffen back in the lineup. But, again, I think if they can continue to knock down some shots, and obviously they were out Howie Fleming, Al Green knocked down a couple, but they've just been so inconsistent with the lineup of who's healthy, who's not. If you have a big in there that's going to open up the floor, guys don't have to play so much on the perimeter off the bounce and create their own shots. You can go inside out. I think it's going to make three-point shooting and perimeter shooting easier for the guards. With that said, they took very few threes the other night. I think they took 10 threes. I mean, that's the lowest that they've taken so far in the season. And so based on kind of style of play and the feed the hot hand, I think it allows them to catch you off guard some different ways because they can shoot. And coach thinks they're a much better shooter. And these guys have shot in their career a higher percentage than what they've shot so far this season. So, again, I think heavy minutes, not a lot of opportunity, kind of a predictable approach in terms of where your scoring is coming from with limited roster flexibility. I think they can win if they score 75, 80 points a game in the Mountain West Conference. But I think if they defend like they did in that late second half, especially the last 6 minutes for longer stretches, then you're holding teams at 60. You can definitely win with that standpoint. But again, it comes with them putting it all together and kind of continue to mesh and continue to grow as who they are now as a team and how they continue to merge moving forward.
Well, you know, during the game when I was doing the Southern reports, I was really keeping an eye on Emmanuel Steffen on the bench, on the floor. I was excited about his energy. I hope it's contagious. I think DGL has the same energy. I think Tyron Jones has the same energy. You have to have that. The buy-in from a lot of guys, the intensity, the hatred of losing to have a really good season from here. I'm going to transition to the NBA. Can a team actually win 75 games in the NBA in this era of load management? This start for OKC is unbelievable.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, I've watched a handful of games with them this year. Obviously, I mean, everybody watched what they did last year and their run through the playoffs. And who knows if Halliburton doesn't get hurt, I think maybe the Pacers have a chance to steal that series in the championship. But what the Thunder are doing right now is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, 24-1, and they've had a couple games where it's close midway through the fourth, and they blow it open, and they win by 15-20. And now that they added Jalen Williams back, they add J-Dub back. I mean, they've got all these different players and the different style of play that they can go with and just the confidence that they have. And obviously, when you've got SGA, who's the reigning MVP, and looks like he's got a chance to go do it again this year, averaging, 32 points a game, 6.5 assists. They're just playing with so much confidence right now. And I saw something besides yesterday about how they're not getting bored of losing. Like it's not going to get monotonous to them because most of these guys aren't used to winning, right? So a lot of them, when they were there early on with the Thunder, they weren't winning a lot of games. And this has been a slow build for them with Coach Degenault and this group. And now they're kind of seeing that come to fruition. And it's fun to watch. I mean, imagine that start with the Warriors a few years back when they win 73 games and you're talking about 24-1 right now. Man, the only thing that's going to get them to fall off is going to be injuries. Or if they do decide to kind of take that foot off the gas and they get deeper into the season, just so that way they're fresh to steamroll the playoffs. But right now they've got to be the hands down favorite. It's going to be exciting to see them come to Vegas to have a chance to win that cup.
Curtis, we'll talk next week. We'll get your reaction to the NBA cup and I will see you and the listeners will hear you coming up on Saturday, 6:30 tip, 6 o'clock with the IBEW NECA pregame. The game is in Henderson at the Lees Family Forum, Tennessee State against UNLV, the Runner Rebels. CT, thank you.
See you soon, Steve.
There he is. Curtis Terry, one of the voices of Rebel basketball, played for the Runner Rebels, and that was an exciting win for the Rebels on the road in an interesting environment at Stanford. We're about 10 minutes away from Xavier Pope. Want to get his opinion on what's going on with Sherrone Moore. Also, the latest with the Bears as Shibiri is going to hit this weekend for the Browns and the Bears.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Adam Hill is the company today at Cofield. We're going to talk to Xavier Pope in less than 10 minutes. More on this Sharon Moore situation, which now there's so much stuff coming out. If you you do a search, the headlines just talking about lots of people in Michigan knew. The guy was boastful about what he was doing, and we were dealing with a criminal allegation as well. So we'll get into possibly what the allegation is, what the actions were that prompted the firing on the heels of apparently knowing that Sharon Moore had some issues for months and months and months, and Michigan turned a blind eye to it because football is more important than anything else. At Michigan. Well, basketball is kind of big, too. So I guess Dusty May now has a long leash. He can do whatever he wants. I thought we saw – I want to get to Raiders because I know you've been out there the last couple of days. I saw a quick hit from Jesse Marek, Silver and Black Sports Network, about Caleb Rogers reacting to his PFF score.
Yeah.
I really like this.
Yeah, he's kind of downplaying it, which is very, very
He had a
smart.
Good score. He, for linemen, like most of us are not sitting there watching the linemen the entire time. And, you know, he had like a 75 grade, which is very good. The organization's been holding off on playing him. So to go out there and play well, okay, that's good. And Rogers was like, I didn't play well.
Well, he said,
missed a bunch of things.
Well, he said in particular, they credit him with zero pressures. And he said there was a miscommunication that probably should have been credited to him.
Okay.
But he said, I understand, you know, I don't know if this was on camera or off, but you kind of understand that they're just looking at whether if you make the block, then you score well. He's right. I think I probably miscommunicated, didn't do the right thing there. But it's also a smart thing, as he knows. He's a very smart guy. Because then if they score you bad, you can be like, just like when I said, when I had a good score.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know.
And you said that before, that he's pretty, I don't know if you said brainiac, but he's a pretty intelligent dude.
Really smart, really, really good, really good kid.
What's his background?
Just playing football at Texas Tech.
Well, I didn't know. I mean, sometimes you find out, they were military parents, and they were both educators. Jalen Hurts' dad coached football, coached him forever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't talked to him too much about upbringing necessarily, but he played a lot of football in college. Was a guy who, was around his whole career in college and didn't come out early. Played a lot, started from the beginning. So he's been pretty, I think pretty well schooled, especially coming from a big school in terms of media training and that sort of thing too. It's pretty smart kid.
Yeah. I like the upbringing question is a good one because I was just thinking of Joe Burrow and why he delivers his message the way he does.
But you saw it's funny, the Orgeron thing came out this week. You watched the Orgeron breakdown of his recruiting process?
No, tell me.
It was pretty good. It was Ed Orgeron talked about it, and the language is great, but he also curses a lot, so I don't think we can play on here. But he talked about a couple of recruiting processes. The Adrian Peterson one, which is kind of famous, but he talked about it, and the actual story that he told is just wild, of how far he went to try to get Adrian Peterson's dad transferred in prison. Because the reason Adrian Peterson I thought this is a story that
football
was out there.
Above everything. Yeah.
But yeah, his Adrian Peterson said, "Coach, I'd love to come to USC." That's where Orgeron was. He goes, "But they only show local games in prison where my dad is." And Orgeron's like, "That's all that's stopping you from coming?" And he said, "Yeah." So he said he left the meeting and flew to the governor and said, "We got to get him transferred.
Come on.
We have to transfer prisons." And he went to the mayor, the governor, senators.
What about on Burrow?
We've got to get him transferred. On Burrow, he said, he basically insinuated, he got off the plane, he's like, "I don't like this kid."
Yep.
Like kind of what you said. And then he said, they sat in a meeting the next day, and he goes, "Oh, I was wrong."
Yep.
"He's the smartest person I've ever met in my life."
Yep. And that's why in the opening minutes of the show, I said, he comes across as a simpleton and kind of stupid. I know he's not, but his delivery is so off-putting. But I think it's part of his delivery is almost to throw people off, and then that gets them kind of mentally screwed. Coming up, EP's on the way. We'll get back into the Michigan situation, which is just growing in embarrassment by the second. Listen, it's got different legs to it than other coaching situations, but the theme is seemingly the same with coaches gone wild, and then when the time is right, maybe everything isn't going as well as they want from a football standpoint, then they're like, "Oh, okay, now we're going to pull the plug." Very weird. The details out on Sharon Moore getting odder and odder by the minute. EP's up. Xavier Pope, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Steve?
Okay, give me your read on this, because as we get more details, Sharon Moore's behavior was odd, to say the least, and there's plenty of people coming out of the Michigan woodwork who were like, "Oh, yeah, we knew about it the whole time."
Yeah, well, you say coach has gone wild, and you think about the fact that the school knew he had health issues. You have to think about what it particularly being potentially charged with a criminal charge. If you have a situation where you can't appreciate your actions, have mental health issues. And so we don't know the depth of what those issues actually are. And I think that the most important thing is to discover, like, what did Michigan know, and then when did they know it, and the details of how they proceeded to act in the face of that. Because now you have an issue where, what did they fire him for cause when they saw they could make a move to be able to avoid paying him because of the mental health issues, and that's why they put him in a room to be able to make sure that that happened. Or it was because of what he actually did. And I think that muddies the waters a little bit bad. It makes the university look already bad with the previous coach and Jim Harbaugh and how he left the school already.
So, Adam, and EP, I don't want to jump ahead in the story. We have to do it delicately because we don't know everything yet. But when we talk mental health issues, what do we know about Sherrone Moore, Adam, that, like, what are the rumors out there, the allegations that may have kind of pushed him over the edge?
Well, I'm trying to sort through what's out there, what's public, and what I just have heard from people.
Well, it sounds like he had a relationship. The relationship ended, and then he chose to go kind of rogue, and that's where we've got some allegations. Is that safe enough?
Before, yeah, and then after, potentially what else might have happened too, and then I guess the bigger question that I would have is, like, if he were to try to take some action or, you know, feel like it was unjust in what happened. How much do his potential actions after the fact hurt his ability to make a case against Michigan?
Well, you have to consider that you have to start. We can't talk about after, though, Adam. You have to talk about if he has some mental health issues, when did the school know he had mental health issues? And in relation to what, though? Did they know he had general mental health issues? Because some of the reports talked about him berating assistants, okay?
Yeah.
So that nothing to do with the sexual assault alleged sexual assault allegation. So you have to consider, okay, where does the firing for mental health issues potentially begin, or the lack of taking proper precautions to be able to act in the face of that? And when does their actions in the face of what happened between himself and maybe and this staffer began? And I think that's where the issues get muddy, and that's where the lawsuit comes into play, in my opinion.
So, I mean, I guess what
I know.
What I'm trying to think where to go. What responsibilities do they have? Because one of the things that's now coming out is, you know, they felt, okay, maybe he does have some mental health issues, and they're going to make this move. They should have been much more prepared for the actual act of telling him that he was fired. Like, how much responsibility does an employer have to, you know, letting somebody know, hey, we're letting you go, and their responsibility for what their actions could be? How much do they have to foresee, like, hey, he might not take this well, something might go wrong?
Well, they have to actually foresee that they have someone who has mental health issues, and how do they make accommodations for them first? So that's why I talked about when you have to find out when did the mental health issue and their knowledge of it began. Because there's allegations that, okay, they just didn't show up until after the relationship ended. How do we know that?
Right.
And I think that's the most important part, is because – and that's where reporting in journalism is so still important in this day and age, because everyone is jumping to have an opinion about Sherrone Moore as a coach, just the decisions that he's made, and how it reflects on other black coaches or other coaches in general. But we don't really know the full details of everything that has happened. I don't think the police that are involved really know everything that's happened. That's why he wasn't charged with had a charge as we know of right now. And so I think that Michigan may have acted fast, but they may have acted abruptly. They may have acted illegally. They may have acted potentially unjustly. They may have acted recklessly. And I think that it just makes the situation just look like a giant mess.
I guess what role does an employer have? And there's so many different layers of this, but in their mind, if they were looking out what was best for them, which is to wait until a certain period of time, which could be after the recruiting window is closed, hey, it's in our best interest to let him stay here until that's over. We have our right as an employer to do that, to say, hey, our best interest is to let him kind of hang in the wind here and hold on, as opposed to your responsibility to, you know, act on something like that is going on. I mean, I guess where is that legal line as an organization?
Adam, you just said the school looking out for their best interest when they potentially could violate the rights of an employee and potentially could be able to lessen the potentiality of what it looks like to have a sexual assault of one of its own employees. Because remember, she's also an employee too. Yeah. So it makes Michigan look really reckless and irresponsible. You are a Power Four institution that has a long story tradition of the Lloyd Carrs and both Tim Beckler. Like, these are legendary coaches that have and these, so you're not a new program. You didn't just show up to the scene trying to get national notoriety. You're the University of Michigan, for goodness sakes.
No, I think it's gross if what we think happened. I just wonder more from a legal standpoint of like, hey, we're looking at what's best for us.
But the thing is, when you have employees, you can't just look out what's best for you. You have to look out what's best for them in protecting their rights because you are employing them. So University of Michigan can't act like that. And also have to consider, this is a university of higher learning. What exactly
forgot that part. Forgot that part. I thought that was a big part of the Michigan man thing, but apparently they've forgotten that the last 5 years and hell going back. You talk about tradition. They also have the tradition of, recently Ed Martin in the last 30 years and also Jim Harbaugh. Let's go in a complete different direction. If I'm a mayor of a city, I'm a city council person, I'm a high-ranking rep of a city. If I'm in Seattle and I organized a pride match, and then the matchup I get is Iran and Egypt, and those two teams and countries are like, we don't want to be part of that. I have to back down as a city? I have to back down?
Absolutely not. These are countries that are outside of your jurisdiction, and you are hosting them. They have to. You're hosting, hey, this is how to make people feel safe and welcome in the city that are LGBTQ+. If you are Egypt and if you are any other country that does not say this doesn't align with your cultural values, you don't participate. You can go over there. Maybe the people who maybe are visiting that have those views or that want to be able to feel safe, even though they can't feel safe in your country, can feel safe in this country. And so I think you are supposed to honor the laws and traditions and culture of this country. But right now, it seems like it is going in reverse in this country. So the fact that Seattle did not back down and said, we're going to do this, it's June 26th, we're going to make this happen, regardless of whether you like it or not, I think that's something, it's good they're standing up for their city and the values of their city right now.
I'll ask Adam. Adam, you're more of the World Cup guy, I think, than EP, and I am certainly. Could they just flop games, just move the game and give Seattle another game, or is FIFA going to come in all tough, basically with no concern for human rights, which they haven't really shown much interest,
considering
Qatar. What do you think the FIFA and the World Cup will do?
I think what has seemed to have happened, where Seattle is saying, oh, no, this is an outdoor. We're going to celebrate this outdoors.
Nonsense.
It's not in the stadium. It's not their thing. It's not the World Cup thing. It's our civic thing. We'll celebrate outside, inside. They can, maintain their hatefulness and their, evil thoughts and do that all in the stadium, and outside we'll celebrate the way we want to celebrate.
Yeah, I agree with Adam on that one. Even though FIFA is basically coming out on the other way, okay, well, this is our city. There's plenty of different things you could do in the city, and they're not gonna change themselves to Egypt just because Seattle's there. I mean, because Seattle to Egypt because Egypt is there.
We have 2 minutes left for I think it's an important issue. I'm not going to say it's as important as this one we just talked about or the wrongdoings at Michigan, but I know in about 2 years, if not like 6 months, there is going to be an AI version of me or a lot better that can just do the show. In the Netherlands, I watched this Mickey D's commercial, and I really didn't even realize what was going on, but apparently they got in hot water, and there's wide-ranging effects of just getting rid of actors and production and going on the cheap, even in a commercial campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it impacts also the quality and how cheaply it looks when it's done. I'm nearby a Skechers ad, and the ad is an AI model. It's clearly an AI model. It doesn't look like it's not a real person. I think that that's where things are going. People can, unfortunately, can raise a stink and throw their hands up in the air. But I think we're in a situation where we are delaying the inevitable, Steve.
Yep. I don't know how we put it back in the box. I don't know. What they can't produce right now in the NFL is an AI quarterback. At least the Colts can't. So that means that Philip Old Man Rivers is back. And I saw your Threads account. Xavier Pope's with us. I saw your Threads account where they had that screenshot of Marcus Spears reacting like really, really annoyed. Do you find this an annoying situation that the NFL had to turn to a 44-year-old dude to come back and fill the quarterback position?
Steve, he hasn't played in 5 years. And I understand he has a relationship with the franchise. Last time they made the, with the playoffs, he was there. But I think you have to consider there are other options they could have gone in. I think they put themselves in a pickle. And they started out pretty hot, and now they're falling off right now. So I think that Marcus Spears was talking about, okay, you're going to talk about this guy. There are other options you could have taken. I mean, people bring up Colin Kaepernick. I don't think people really mean that per se. But what they're talking about is, oh, the criticism was, hey, this guy's not played in a while, and so all the different excuses to give him not to get on the field. But look at you right now, given a guy who's 44 years old, haven't played in 5 years. The job to be able to come from start for the Indianapolis Colts.
I got less than a minute left. I see that it's 27 degrees right now in Chicago. That's where Xavier Pope is. It's going to be 13 on Sunday when the Browns are in town to take on the Bears. And the way you combat it is yoga and hot yoga. tonight is 420 night. THC sure cocktails, hot yoga with THC cocktails, gummies and vapes to puff in class and popsicles. I love this.
I mean, I love it. I love it, too. I'm on my way there now, Steve. I'm excited. And so we're going to have they're going to have a Equilibria. It's a woman's 420 brand. They're going to make THC cocktails. They're going to have these really cool popsicles. So after you get done sweating, you can cool off by having a delicious 420 popsicle, Steve.
How do you struggle? I'm looking at a picture here. It's a selfie of you with three women. How do you suffer through this whole setup? This is tough, man. I feel for you.
What happened?
I'm just looking at a picture of your selfie, your yoga selfie. There's a couple guys in the background, but I see three ladies with you, so it's a good setup. It looks like fun. Looks like a lot of fun. We're up against it, EP. We're up against it. Love you, buddy.
Love you guys.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, yoga.